call to order this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. It's 20 minutes to 2 in the afternoon of Thursday, March 27th, 2008. Members present are Senators Bundy, Davis, and Ellis. Appreciate you all being here today. We have a full agenda of about 9 bills on which we hope to take action or at least consideration. The first order of business is to hear from the governor's appointment to the State Personnel Board, Deborah English. So if Ms. English, if you come toward the microphone. While that's going on, I'd like to announce an order, and the chair retains the right to jump around in the schedule to accommodate people's busy agendas today. But we hope to take, under bills previously heard, Senate Bill 113, Nursing Mothers in the Workplace. There is a CS addressing members' concerns. Next will be SJR 18, Child Product Safety, followed by House Bill 289, Employment Tax Exemption. Representative Seaton is with us. Then we'll go back to Senate Bill 118, the Plastic Bag Fee. There's a CS on that bill as well. We'll be joined by Senator Elton for that, as well as new bills, Senate Bill 286, Pharmacy Benefits Managers, Senate Bill 305, Recorking of Wine Served with a Meal, followed by House Bill 357, Claims Against Real Estate Licensees, and finally, House Bill 413, extending the Real Estate Commission. If these are new bills, they will be held over, as is our custom, in this committee for further consideration. But we'd like to get the initial presentations done succinctly. And so if all public testimony can be very to the point, we would appreciate it very much. Ms. English, are you available? Okay, that's news to me. We'll figure out the communication problem with the administration and hope to take care of that at a future meeting. Let's move on to Senate Bill 113, Nursing Mothers in the Workplace. Mr. Cunningham, if you could join us at the table. Yes.
Just an ease, please.
Okay, sure. We'll stand at ease for a moment. On the record, Mr. Cunningham, Senate Bill 113 is before us. There is a proposed committee substitute that's available to members in their packets. Could you just identify yourself for the record and then briefly walk through the CS, and we will set aside action on the bill at that time.
Yes. Patrick Cunningham, staff to Senator Ellis. The new CS is identified as /
Okay,
E.
Mr. Cunningham, can you hang on just a moment?
Sure.
We're going to attempt to get the committee substitute available to all the members.
What's the number?
Yes, we're on Senate Bill 113, and we're going to make sure every committee member has a copy of the proposed committee substitute.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Mr. Cunningham, please proceed.
The changes are made to better clarify the intent of the bill in response to questions that were raised by the committee when the bill was first heard. One change was made on line 10, section B. An employer shall provide a private and sanitary room or other location in close proximity to the work area. What was removed was the word secure. That was done to make it more flexible for the employer to provide the room without enduring any additional costs. A new section was added, which was line 13, section C. This states, nothing in this section requires an employer to allow a child in the workplace at times other than break times. Senator Stevens had expressed concern that somehow there was the assumption that the employer would have to provide daycare services and felt that this would be prohibitive. And so this change was included to specify that this was not a requirement of the employer. A section was excluded, which was section E, which was felt to be no longer necessary because the wording is no longer present, and this was undue hardship, and it defined what undue hardship meant, and this was removed from the bill. The overriding emphasis is that to provide reasonable accommodation to the nursing mother by the employer.
Okay. Mr. Cunningham, thank you. Are there any comments or questions? Senator Bundy?
Yeah, the question about the undue hardship, I mean, one person's reasonable is another person's undue hardship. How are we going to define reasonable, or are we going to end up in court?
Mr. Cunningham.
Chair, Senator Bundy, that is a something that perhaps could be included. Reasonable may be specified perhaps by the state agency that will be implementing the bill.
So it could be the subject of regulation. Okay, any other comments or questions? If not, let's set this matter aside. Thank you, Mr. Cunningham. Appreciate your presentation. We're going to move on now to Senate Joint Resolution 18, Child Product Safety. Senator Wilikowski or staff? Okay, they're not available. Let's move on to House Bill 289, Employment Tax Exemption Spill Response. Representative Seaton. Okay, we really need these folks to stick around.
Tell them to come by April 15th.
Mm-hmm. Honey, die.
Well, we should be able to find a Wilikowski or a Seaton. Representative Seaton, we need you to stick around.
Sorry about that.
Welcome back. I know you were here earlier, and our agenda is in flux here to try and accomplish our goals today. But please go ahead very briefly on House Bill 289. That is the bill before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 289, I believe that I introduced last time. Would you like me to reintroduce the bill?
Just give us a couple of sentences to remind us of the bill. Well, there is no proposed committee substitute. At this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This deals with oil spill contingency plans and fishing vessel crew members that are paid only by a share of the catch in their normal fishing operations, and it allows them not to pay into unemployment insurance when they're on training for oil spill responses as long as it's less than 7 continuous days. So if there's a major spill, they would be automatically included in the unemployment insurance for the state.
Okay. Comments or questions for the sponsor? This bill does have a further referral to the Finance Committee. We could take action today, or we could hold this further. Mm-hmm. Senator Bundy?
Yeah, if you're ready for a motion.
If there's no further, there hasn't been any kind of problems with the bill that we've discerned in this committee, so I will entertain a motion at this time.
And I'd move CS for House Bill 289 with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Okay. There is a motion before us. Is there a discussion of the motion? Any objection to the motion to move the bill? Hearing none, so ordered. The bill moves on to the Finance Committee. And Senator Bundy, thank you for the motion.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chairman.
Seaton, thank you for being with us. Okay. Senator Wilikowski or his staff with us? If not, we're going to move on to Senate Bill 305. Mr. Owen, could you join us at the table? This is a recorking of wine served with a meal. Okay. This is a Senate Labor and Commerce Committee bill, and we'll just have committee staff familiarize us with the issues involved.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dana Owen. I am an aide to Senator Ellis and the staff of this committee. Senate Bill number 305 is a very simple bill. It would allow patrons at a restaurant who order a bottle of wine to take that bottle of wine with them as they leave if they haven't finished the bottle. The bill is supported by the restaurant industry, as you can see in your backup material, with the idea that they believe that people will be more likely to purchase a bottle of wine rather than buy a glass of wine. It's also supported by folks who believe that there is now a positive incentive for people to drink too much at the table, because if you've ordered an expensive bottle of wine, you may feel compelled to finish it. As it is, you have to leave it behind. And so the bill was introduced to correct this problem. I note that there are 34 other states that have laws on the books that permit this kind of recorking.
Okay. Mr. Owen, thanks for the presentation. Senator Bundy?
Yeah, just a quick question, if I may. Thank you. The industry is comfortable with the resealing because obviously we have an open container law, and they feel that they can accomplish this without undue inconvenience.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that that is the case. From the literature I've read, they are quite happy with that provision in other states, and no one has raised an objection to that I know of.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, have we heard from restaurants, bars, various industry people?
Mr. Chairman, we have not received any formal written communication, but we have had verbal communication that indicates that restaurateurs are happy with this.
Okay. And if you're ready for a motion.
I am, and it has been our custom in this committee to have initial presentations of bills. This issue has been before the legislature for some time. I'd be willing to, because it's a very simple, straightforward bill, no known opposition, I would be willing to consider a motion at this time, because it is a Senate bill that needs to progress through the process to have any hope of final disposition this year. So is there any further discussion or question about the bill? I am willing to send this bill along its way today in the interest of further consideration. So, Senator Bundy, if you'd like to.
Well, noting it is a Labor and Commerce bill, and it should get some special consideration because of that.
Yeah.
I would move that we move from committee Senate Bill 305 with individual recommendations.
Okay. There is a motion to move the bill. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The bill moves on to the Rules Committee. Mr. Owen, thank you for your presentation. Let's move back to the bill we skipped over, SJR 18, Child Product Safety. Ms. Pousté, please join us at the table. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Kat Pousté. I'm an aide to Senator Wilikowski, and I apologize on behalf of myself and for him for missing.
Oh, it's a busy day. Did you want to just very briefly remind us of the issues at hand? There is no proposed committee substitute at this time.
Correct.
Okay.
SJR 18 calls on the United States Consumer Product Safety Commission, or CSPC, to test materials used in children's products and toys for hazardous chemicals like lead. We spoke at length last week about about the testing of toys and who does it and how there's no government agency currently tasked to test children's toys for toxicity. The CSPC checks for choking aspiration issues, but not the effects of sucking on a pacifier for hours in a day. So we ask that the Alaska State Legislature join 29 other state legislatures in supporting increased safety testing on chemicals in toys and children's products. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or concerns? Would you like us to hold action?
Yep. Move.
It's okay. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Pousté, for your presentation. At this time, it's a resolution on an important subject. I favor it passing along in the process, so the chair will entertain a motion at this time.
Mr. Chairman, I move we
Senator Bundy.
Move SJR 18 forward with individual recommendations.
Okay. Motion to move the bill. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The bill moves on to the Rules Committee. Ms. Pustay, thanks for being with us.
Thank you all.
And Mr. Chairman, are the rest of our bills now new this hearing first time?
No, there's Senator Elton has joined us, and he has two bills today, one previously heard, Senate Bill 18, the plastic bag fee. But we could move on to Senate Bill 286, which is the first hearing on pharmacy benefits managers. There's some of the pharmacy folks here. That would be a first hearing. That bill would be held over. So no action would be taken. So I'd like to move on to skip plastic bags for now and go on to Senate Bill 286. Senator Elton, if you'd join us, please. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So this is the initial presentation. Just identify yourself for the record and please go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kim Elton. I'm Senator from District B. I appreciate the hearing on this bill. I think what my expectation is that the committee can help us begin a dialogue, and I would hope that the committee can help us refine that dialogue as we go along. I will note for the record that this bill is based on model legislation that has been done elsewhere. I will also note for the record that we already know that there are a few issues of alignment that need to occur between this bill and the existing structure here in the state of Alaska. And with that as a prelude, Mr. Chair, I will briefly present the bill. You have people here to testify on the bill who, quite frankly, are far more expert in the ways and means of pharmacy benefits managers. They deal with them on a regular basis as part of their business. Pharmacy benefit managers are, and I'm going to shorten my testimony by referring to them in the future as PBMs, are groups of businesses that people contract with to manage pharmacy and prescription drug insurance plans. These plan managers include, for example, the state of Alaska, but also federal government and union groups, others that contract to manage the drug portion of health insurance plans. We'll also note that PBMs are largely unregulated. And the purpose of this bill is to provide transparency into kind of their business model. PBMs negotiate with drug manufacturers and pharmacies on behalf of health insurance plans, but those negotiations and those business arrangements that they have with pharmacies and with pharmaceutical companies are not transparent. There's a veil between that information and the person who contracts with these people to manage the benefit plans. There's a danger in that. PBMs do receive financial remuneration from drug manufacturers. They don't, because those transactions are behind a veil, they don't pass on any information to the contractor on what kind of remuneration they're getting, how that affects the allocation or the recommendations that are made on what drugs should be used, and neither does it allow the contractor, and I'm going to use the state as an example, it doesn't allow the state to know what kind of other profits the PBM is getting based on the contract that the state has with the PBM. There is also a major concern, and I'm going to get back to this issue in a few minutes. There's a major concern about how the PBMs increase their profit margins with arrangements or actions that they take to pharmacies. That's a special problem. Because in many cases, PBMs also have mail-order drug stores. And so it's to their benefit to try and shift business from a pharmacy that may be located down the street that has a relationship with both a doctor and the person who is getting the drugs, and an impulse by them to shift business to their mail-order firms. The way the bill is written now is that it allows the Board of Pharmacy to regulate the terms of an agreement with PBM. And it lets the Division of Insurance access the PBM records that are pertinent to the contract that they have with the person providing the drug benefit. This gets back to the issue of alignment. I'm not sure that because that structure works in some other states, I'm not sure it works best here. It may be one of the things that we're looking at is whether or not we actually want the Board of Pharmacy to get into this kind of business. I'm not sure the Board of Pharmacy wants to get into that kind of business, and I think it may be more appropriate for the Division of Insurance to fill the role. I would just note for the record that this is an issue that is not just an issue for the state of Alaska. 20 states' attorney generals have sued PBMs to try and get the information, and 8 states, and plus the District of Columbia, have adopted a transparency bill similar in respect to the bill that is in front of you. I want to make it very clear that when I'm talking about transparency, I'm not talking about the state or any other contractor who contracts with the PBM. I'm not saying that those contractors can go in, review the business model as it pertains to their contract that they have with the PBM, and then post the information on a website. I mean, when I'm talking about transparency, I'm talking about transparency between the contractor and the PBM itself. The bill makes it very, very clear that the information that is gained by the person who is contracting is information that is not shared with the public. It's proprietary business information, so it's only between the contractor and the contract I mentioned that I wanted to get back to the pharmacy issue and how they may be injured, because there's one other important element to this bill, and that is a provision that does not allow what is called extrapolation audits by PBMs. PBMs or their agents can now go to a local pharmacy and audit the books of the pharmacy. If they find an error, and it could be a keystroke error, as the pharmacy has entered data that is remitted to the PBM, it could be a keystroke error. And that error may be a $25 error, one way or the other, either for the pharmacy or for the PBM. An extrapolation audit allows the PBM to say, okay, we found one error in the prescription of this one drug. This pharmacy has done 150, 1,500 other prescriptions for this drug. And the extrapolation audit allows the PBM to then charge the pharmacy for an error on each of the 150 transactions or the 1,500 transactions, even though it may have been a simple data entry error on one occasion. And you may hear testimony, if not now, at some time in the future, that a $25 or a $50 error can cost a pharmacy because of the use of extrapolation audits, can cost the pharmacy, you know, $75,000, $80,000. And so this bill, the other important element of this bill is it does not allow extrapolation audits. It does allow, it doesn't disallow audits by the PBM, but the error is only the error that is found in the audit. With that, Mr. Chair, I would try to answer any questions you may have. Please don't be offended if I suggest that there may be somebody else that you already have listed that can better address the question.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Elton. Any comments or questions at this stage? Senator Bundy.
Thank you. Particularly in view of Alaska's geography, but also a view of economics. I often buy my shoes and shirts online. It's cheaper. I don't have a clerk that has to serve me. You had mentioned in your testimony that you wanted to prevent forcing online purchases, but would you view this legislation anyway of prohibiting online purchases?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Bundy. I hope I didn't misspeak. There is nothing in this bill that would discourage anybody from shopping online. What I tried to convey is that there is a business imperative that some PBMs have to try and create a situation in which they make it easier for people to buy their drugs through their subsidiary or their colleague company online. And because of that, I would suggest that, I'm not suggesting that it happens across the board, but I would suggest that PBMs that are in that situation may not have a business incentive to try and keep your local pharmacy going, because if the local pharmacy isn't there, then because of our geography, and especially in some of the smaller communities, the only other way to go is to the mail order business.
Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm not asking clearly. I think what I've heard you say is there may be a possibility to encourage or force online, and this bill then would prevent that, which by extension would then discourage online.
No, I'm sorry. What I mean to suggest, through the chair, what I mean to suggest is that there is no way that the contractor will know if that kind of thing happens without being able to pull back the veil that that PBMs now have. The contractor may not know. May not know, for example, what the price of a drug through the mail order service is compared to the price of a drug in a pharmacy.
I think I understand it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We have a couple of folks to testify before we hold the bill over. First is Barry Christensen, and then followed by Regina Benjamin.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you. Barry Christensen, and then Regina Benjamin. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Chairman Ellis and members of the Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Barry Christensen, and I'm a practicing community pharmacist in Ketchikan. Today I'm representing the Alaska Pharmacists Association as the co-chair of the Legislative Committee. Our members are licensed pharmacists and pharmacy technicians working in Alaskan pharmacies today. It is my pleasure to be here in Juneau for the first hearing on SB 286, and we appreciate Senator Elton for introducing the legislation. This year, I have previously testified before this committee via teleconference on SB 196, the Prescription Monitoring Program, so my voice may be semi-familiar. The bill before you is an equity bill. It is a bill that will help ensure Alaska patients, patients, employers, and pharmacies are being fairly treated by an industry that manages the processing of prescription drug benefits. This industry, as Senator Elton has noticed, has referenced, is collectively known as PBMs. And they started out simply acting as a conduit for claims processing between pharmacies and insurance companies. However, this simple model has ballooned into a myriad of other services that has made this industry a very profitable middleman in managed healthcare. Our association believes this profitability has come at the expense of patient care and has not resulted in lowering overall drug costs. It has been estimated that in some pharmacies, up to 25% to 30% of pharmacy staff time every day is spent trying to navigate the maze of pharmacy benefit manager edits. This time is usually spent on the phone talking to a claims representative in another state or even country. This is valuable time that could be spent on patient care. Yet for all of our efforts, our members every day bear the brunt of public comment about higher yearly drug costs. We believe that the transparency called for in SB 286 will help ensure that the manufacturer rebates negotiated by the PBMs will flow back to the plan sponsor or employer. We also believe that the authorized substitution sections of the bill will help ensure that patients know they are receiving the most cost-effective medication as approved by their prescriber. Far too often, we see instances of drug substitutions being made by PBM-owned mail-order pharmacies. These substitutions, while legal, are sometimes not communicated to the patient. This can result with the patient continuing to take the originally prescribed medication along with the substituted medication simply because they sound or look alike. And that's easily done when drugs are, a couple of examples are blood pressure drugs called Ramipril and Lisinopril, very similar sounding. Lastly, SB 286 is not a bill that pads the pockets of Alaska pharmacies. It does, however, set up pricing guidelines based on national standards and sets in place time limits for pharmacy payments and audits. I'll close by saying that most Alaska pharmacists don't believe that legislation is needed for every healthcare ill. We are a highly regulated profession. However, we feel now is the time to consider regulating the PBM industry because it has had too many instances of unfair business practices. We thank you for your time and consideration and urge you to support SB 286.
Okay. Mr. Christensen, thank you for your testimony. Any comments or questions? If not, we'd like to get a copy of your written testimony for the record. Thank you very much for being here. Let's move on quickly to Regina Benjamin. Ms. Benjamin, if you're there, please give your full name and affiliation and go right ahead.
Yes, my name is Regina Benjamin, and I'm Senior Director, Public Policy for the National Community Pharmacist Association. We're located in Alexandria, Virginia. We're a national trade association that represents community pharmacists, that is, independent pharmacists, and some of our members are in Alaska, and so we're testifying today in support of this legislation. And we've testified in other states and at different forums in favor of this kind of legislation. Our concern is that PBMs are the only entities that are involved in a variety of functions that impact the delivery and the cost of prescription drug benefits to the consumer, but they're largely unregulated. The most stringent regulation to date was found in a law passed in the state of Maine. However, the PBMs were successful in tying that law up in court for several years, and it did not, however, it did succeed at every level of court action, and including with the Supreme Court denying writ of certiorari for the Pharmacy Care Management Association, which is PCMA, the trade association for the PBMs that challenged the law. And the law finally became effective June 2006. Now, PCMA is also suing the District of Columbia that also had a law similar to the Maine law, and that lawsuit is still ongoing on appeal. Right now, what we have is basically regulation by litigation and settlements. There have been settlements, two large settlements, one by 22 states' attorneys general against Medco, and that happened in 2004, and then most recently last month, a settlement with CVS Caremark, PBM, with 28 states and the District of Columbia. And both of these settlements and consent orders involved substitution and lack of transparency. And that's two things that this bill before you today tries to set forth in a regulatory scheme for Alaska. There are about 15 states over the last 3 or 4 years that have passed some kind of legislation that has some minimal regulatory oversight of PBMs, and states continue to look at that industry and debate whether or not they should provide regulation of it. Some of the supporters of legislation are the National Legislative Association on Prescription Drug Prices, and that's a group of bipartisan legislators, and they were in fact behind the law that passed in Maine, the law that passed in the District of Columbia. They're behind laws that have been introduced, proposals that have been introduced in New York and New Jersey. Consumers Union, AARP, the National Mental Health Association, and in some cases medical societies have also testified in favor of some kind of regulatory oversight. We are not trying to put PBMs out of business. We're not trying to force one-size-fit-all contracts, which they say that this kind of legislation requires. What we're asking for is a measure of government oversight of an industry that has a large impact on the cost of health care in this country. With transparency, We believe that employers will save money because they will realize that mail order is not as cheap as they think it is based on the information, the limited amount of information that they've been given. The bill before you provides consumer protections, and those are very important, and especially in the area of substitution, because as I mentioned, the consent orders talk about substitution, and that's been a major problem. And the reason the PBMs substitute medication is because they get a higher rebate on one drug than they do on another, and they don't consider the medical ramifications for the person taking the drug. So I'll close with saying that we are very glad to see that you all are considering this legislation. It will provide a lot of benefit for your constituents, and we support it. Thank you.
Ms. Benjamin, thank you for your time and testimony today. Any questions for the presenter? If not, thank you again. Is there anyone else? That's all I had on the list, but is there anyone else who would like to testify on this bill at this time? If not, the public hearing on this bill is closed. This is the start of a conversation and work on this issue. We appreciate the folks who have testified. Senator Elton, thank you very much. We're going to move on now to House. So the bill is officially held over for further consideration. We'll move now to House Bill 357, Claims Against Real Estate Licensees. And I understand Ms. Wolf from the House Labor and Commerce Committee will come forward to present the bill. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eleanor Wolf. I am staff to Representative Kurt Olson in the House Labor and Commerce Committee. We introduced this bill at the request of the Alaska Association of Realtors. They felt that it was necessary due to some of the difficulties with the surety fund to provide that all real estate agents have E&O insurance, Arizona Mentions. Most large brokerages do also already provide E&O insurance, but there are about 40% of the real estate agents in state that don't. This proviso would have the department seeking a group policy that all members could belong to at a reasonable rate with a minimum $100,000 coverage. This would allow all the complaints or a good portion of the complaints that go to the surety fund to be handled through insurance rather than have all of the complaints go through the surety fund. And there's a maximum on the surety fund of $15,000. There's a good number of complaints now against real estate transactions that exceed that. The surety fund would be renamed to the recovery fund, wherein it would cover actions of deceit and breach of trust. Basically, that's it. There is a insurance company outside that's handling the existing 13 states that have this provision. They are willing to make an offer once the parameters are laid out by the department, and we believe that we could get our agents covered for 200 or less a year, that approximate area. That's basically the bill, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Wolf, for the presentation. So there's some assurance out there that there's an entity willing to write business in Alaska for this purpose at an affordable rate?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Our belief. Okay. Any comments or questions for Ms. Wolf? If not, thank you very much. We'll call forward Dave Feakin. Mr. Feakin, good afternoon. Good to see you. We also have Mark Davis from Commerce available if there are any questions on House Bill 357. If you could just give your name and affiliation for the record, and please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Feakin. I'm a real estate broker in Kenai. I'm here representing the Alaska Association of Realtors and its 1,600 members. House Bill 357 is a joint effort of the Alaska Association of Realtors, the Division of Occupational Licensing, the Division of Insurance, and the Department of Law. And the bill accomplishes two points. The surety fund, as pointed out in the legislative budget and audit report, recommended some addressing the issue of expanding the claim coverage, which is what this bill accomplishes. And it does that by imposing mandatory errors and omissions insurance. The Surety Fund was started in 1974, and it basically covers reimbursement for fraud, misrepresentation, deceit, and conversion of trust. By statute, the fund balance is to be between $250,000 and $500,000. That money comes from the licensees at the amount of $30 during a license period, which is every 2 years. A few years ago, the fund balance was typically at or above the $500,000, but more recently, the fund balance has been bouncing around the bottom or below the $250,000 mark. And in analysis of that, there are two reasons that the fund balance is dropping. There are a very high number of frivolous claims that are brought against licensees. In other words, claims that are meritless, but it costs the fund money to hold the hearings. So the cost of those hearings is subtracted by the fund. The second is a reduction in the number of licensees. That moves with the market. Alaska is not exempt from what is going on outside, although not near as severely impacted. The number of licensees in the business doubled from the year 2000 to 2005. The number of transactions peaked in 2005 in the U.S. and peaked in 2006 in Alaska. In the U.S. as a whole, there's been a 33% drop in the number of real estate transactions. In Alaska, there's been a drop of 11% from 2006 to 2007. If you look at the first two or three months of this year, that continues on about a 10% decline in the number of transactions. That will result in a drop in the number of licensees, so there's less income to the fund. I think it's important to understand how small this problem really is in light of the size of the real estate market. In 2006, there was 15 claims filed against the Surety Fund. There was no money spent on it. None of those were successful in obtaining a claim. In 2007, there was 13 claims filed. There was 2 claims paid. I looked at the MLS statistics for South Central Alaska plus Kodiak, which the MLS covers Anchorage, the Valley, Eagle River, Kenai, Homer, Soldotna. In that period of time, if you average the 2 years, there was 9,119 real estate transactions per year on the average. That's 18,240 customers and clients that were successful in buying and selling real estate. The value of those transactions was $2 billion. So in a period of, you have $2 billion worth of real estate, or $4 billion worth of real estate, you've had 2 successful claims. By imposing the mandatory E&O, which the industry totally, overwhelmingly supports, because it puts errors and omissions out there at a very affordable cost at $200 or less. The other 13 states, only one of them is at $200. And they are not large states. I mean, that's a question that's came up in the past. Colorado, Idaho, Iowa, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Nebraska, New Mexico, North Dakota, Rhode Island, South Dakota, Tennessee and Wyoming are the states involved. In speaking with Rice and Associates, they consider Alaska very similar to Wyoming as far as the number of licensees. They considered us less of a risk because we don't have the very high second home values that Wyoming has. So they felt very comfortable that they could meet the $200 limit. In that pretty much... Eleanor pretty much completed most of the testimony on the E&O policy. If there are any questions, I'd be glad to answer those. Okay.
Mr. Feakin, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Is there any known opposition to the legislation that you've come across?
No. There was none through the entire House. We had some work to work out the mechanism for actually obtaining. The state has never purchased a group policy before for licensees, so there was some mechanisms that had to be worked out there, and that was it.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify during this public hearing on House Bill 357? I have nobody else signed up, so we're going to hold this bill over, and I'd like to say to Senator Elton that, Senator Elton, we're not going to be able to consider any action on Senate Bill 118, the plastic bag at this meeting. We can't continue the meeting. I do want to hear from folks on the on House Bill 413. But I know your time is valuable, and we just won't be able to. No, your prop will have to wait for another day. But thanks for being with us, and I should have told you that before we went on to the next bill. Okay, House Bill 357 is held over for further action in the near future. And now we have before us House Bill, and we've lost our quorum, but it is okay to continue the public meeting with House Bill 413, extending the Real Estate Commission. That bill will be heard and held over as well. Okay, Ms. Wolf, back to the table to present this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think I've ever done two in one day with you before.
Well, it's double duty, and you're earning your pay, so we appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, my name is Eleanor Wolf, and I am staff to Representative Kurt Olson and the House Labor and Commerce Committee. This one's real simple. We introduced this request to the Department of Commerce and Community Development and LBNA. Nobody at that point had introduced a bill to extend the Real Estate Commission, and per the recommendation of the legislative auditor, we have introduced a bill to extend it to 2016.
Pretty straightforward, pretty simple.
Line and a half, sir.
Your very succinct testimony, we appreciate it. Any questions or comments? I'd note for the record that Mark Davis from Department of Commerce is available if there are any questions. And Pat Davidson is with us for questions. We're going to ask her to earn her pay today, too, and come forward for the record. We put a lot of stock in this lady's opinion, and just want to ask you if, after you state your name and record or name and affiliation for the record, if you could just let us know if the extension comports with your work on this commission.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit, and our review of the Real Estate Commission found that they were operating in a satisfactory manner, and therefore we did make a recommendation that the termination date be extended to the year 2016. One of the recommendations that may be of interest to the committee, however, is that we also made a recommendation to the Office of the Governor that they verify the qualifications of board members before presenting those members to the legislature for confirmation. One of the recent appointments to the board did not have the necessary years of professional experience.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Davidson. So you've made that clear to the executive branch, and does it seem like that? I hate to put you on the spot and ask you to characterize that, but did it seem to you that that was well-received advice?
Mr. Chairman, in the audit includes responses both from the department as well as from the governor's office, and they did concur with the recommendation and spoke of improving their procedures to ensure that professional requirements were met for any of their nominees.
Okay. And so just to be clear, the bill then comports with your recommendation for the length of extension.
Yes,
Mr.
Chairman, it does.
Okay. Anything for Ms. Davidson? If not, thank you, Pat, for being here. Appreciate your help. Is there anyone else who would like to make a comment about this bill before we close public testimony? Seeing none, public testimony is closed and House Bill 413 is held over for action in the very near future. Thank you both very much. That completes our hearing for today. That's all the business we can conduct. I'd like to thank Senator Bundy on the record for his help with motions and his attendance today. I guess it's about 2:26 in the afternoon, we are adjourned.